Welcome to the Boost VC podcast, where we talk to incredible guests building our sci-fi future. We're going to dig into the latest topics around venture capital, startups, and sci-fi technologies. I'm your host, Adam Draper, founder and managing director of Boost VC, and I'm a fourth generation venture capitalist. Are you ready to rock? Today on the Boost VC podcast, I get a chance to interview an amazing entrepreneur named Liana Thompson. She's the co-founder and CEO of Aquai, which is Aqua AI, where they're building robotic fish to save the seas, and they are focused on providing infrastructure for aquaculture, which is fish farming, and feeds like 25% of the planet. Huge market, really, really excited. On today's episode, we cover the trouble with the ocean being seen as a nonprofit, how a journalist like Liana Thompson becomes an entrepreneur, and how Norway is really, really cold, but also the center of all of the activity around aquaculture. This is the first Ocean Tech podcast that the Boost VC has ever released, but I also think it might be the first Ocean Tech podcast, period. So I'm super excited to release this and start getting everyone really, really obsessed with this industry. Listen, learn, and let me know. Welcome to the Boost VC podcast. I'm here with Liana Thompson, who is a founder and CEO of Aquai. There's so many things I have to touch on before we even explain what Aquai is. One is Liana's name is spelled L-I-A-N-E. And so I thought it was Leanne for the longest time. And then I continue to say it wrong in general. So can you pronounce it for me?
One day I said, this is Liana.
Yeah. It was like, hey, is there anything I'm saying wrong? Like whatever. And she's like, well, my name isn't Leanne. I had been saying Leanne and, you know.
It's the way it's spelled.
Yeah.
It's the way it's spelled.
And then Aquai is spelled A-Q-U-A, so Aqua, A-I. And so I keep calling it Aqua A-I. And obviously
it's Aquai.
It's Aquai.
But it is intelligence below the surface.
It is intelligence, but it's intelligence below the surface. So do you want to give a quick one-liner on what Aquai does?
Sure. So we use biomimetic robotic fish platforms to gather data from the ocean.
And so before I get into the whole spiel, which is fascinating, but I've been obsessed with ocean tech for about 18 months. And Liana had actually been randomly, while I was getting obsessed with ocean technology and no pun intended, like deep diving into the sector, Liana literally, I must have been on some like cold email investor list. Was that, I don't know how you got my email.
Well, one of my partner's specialties, Simeon Peterkowski, is that he can find anybody's email.
Yeah.
And you were on a list of people that I targeted that I would like to do business with.
And then it was like over like 2 years or so. I don't know how long.
At least, probably.
I was getting these quarterly updates from this like weird fish robot company. And I would always read it. I read everything in my email. I would always read it. And I'd be like, oh, this is pretty interesting. And then as I got obsessed with ocean tech, like I saw one of these emails. It was like perfect timing. And I was like, I need to learn more. And then now we're friends and it's, yeah. Okay. So that's our history of getting, like, she just consistently.
Yeah. So if anybody ever says, don't send out cold emails, I'm always the one who says, this is how I find people. Yeah. This is how I, you know, learn.
They were really good because I felt like I developed a relationship with the brand before. You weren't asking for anything. It was just like, hey, this is what we're up to.
Robot fish lady here. Yeah. Here's your update.
Okay. How did you get into the what we call ocean technology space? Like, what was your career path to get there?
Oh, my career path. Okay, so I'll take a step back even. So I was actually formerly a journalist, and I was covering some, you know, the Q of Israel, I guess is how you would say it, you know, like in James Bond Q. And I met this gentleman who is Simeon Peterkowski, who had been building 2-meter-tall humanoid robots for the past 20-some years. And he was the go-to guy if you needed a gadget made or a problem solved. So when I met with him, he was obsessing about a promise that he'd made to his daughter, which after she grew up in the lab with him, you know, building these land-based robots, she came home from school one day and said, "Dad, you have to save the oceans. You got to stop building robots for land and build something that can help our seas." So he started studying fish and the whole bit. And you fast forward a couple of years after knowing everything about fish, and he was building this robotic fish, and that, no kidding, the first day we met, he was saying, "I have to show you my fish." And so on the way home, he made a stop in a kiosk where you buy condoms. And he went to the guy across from the corner, because it wasn't, you know, like an automated machine, and he said, "I need to have the biggest condom you can find." And the guy is like, looks and pauses, and he looks at me, and I'm like innocently standing there wondering, also, what
is going on?
Little bragging, you know, braggadocious there. And he goes, "No." And Simon, he's like this, you know, disheveled, you know, inventor guy. And he's like, no, it's for my fish. It's for my fish," which made it even more confusing. And the guy looked at me, and I winked at the guy, and I said, "It's for his fish." But the long story short was, he was using it to he was using it to waterproof what we would call the proof of concept, and that was how I got
I'm
in.
I'm not sure that sounds any better than any of those other innuendos we just heard.
But it is a funny story.
But that is such a funny story. Okay, because this is audio and not video, what does the Aquai fish look like?
The first version looked like a clownfish. And what that version did was, you know, swim like a real fish, looked just like a clownfish. We bought in a, you know, sculptor friend of mine from Germany and sculpted it. And it was able to tweet. And there was a camera on board, so it was able to, you know, give information that way and visuals.
It was able to, like, social media tweet?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So it was just, like, auto-tweeting?
It was auto-tweeting, yeah.
Oh,
the picture of you. So it would swim, and if you looked at it, it took a picture, and then it would tweet it.
It was a selfie fish.
It was a selfie fish, exactly.
Okay.
underwater look, I guess.
I did not know that, yeah. And I love it so much more.
It was a clownfish. As a young company, you know, you want to get on the map somehow. And so we decided, well, everybody loves clownfish. So we made the first one as a clownfish, which was about, you know, 12 inches long. Now, fast forward, the fish that we have today, which is about, you know, about a meter and a half, is fully colored like a clownfish, but it's much more sophisticated. So it gathers data such as oxygen, temperature, salinity, pH, and it is currently swimming in northern Norway in fish farms, actually, that are supplying Whole Foods with salmon. So we use a robotic fish to monitor live fish so that the farmers have the information to make smart decisions vis-a-vis our oceans and the fish itself.
And so you went from journalist to saving the ocean. Was there anything like in between those two things, or was it just like, "I need to save the oceans"?
I think it was more like, okay, I came back to the U.S. and said, "I don't really want to do media right now here," and said, "I want to do something where I can dedicate myself and still learn." You know, this constant, I think every journalist has this hunger to always be learning, and I wanted to do that. And we found ourselves in a situation whereby, where can we dedicate our time in a positive manner so that we could really make an impact? And the promise to Emily, it just kind of organically came together that, why don't we take this invention of yours and this promise to Emily and make a business out of this, make a life out of this. And that's kind of the direction we took. And at that point in time, I have to tell you, you know, I like to fly. I mean, I do love to scuba dive, but I wasn't, the ocean, you know, it was more, you know, but and over time and learning so much about the importance of, you know, obviously the ocean, the oxygen, how it all intertwines, I'm happy for the decision that we did make and in the path that we've chosen.
And for, I'm sure over the course, how long have you been doing this now?
So we founded in August of 2014.
Okay, so 5 years, 4.5 years.
4 years.
Let's say. Four and
three
change.
Months.
Yeah, 3 months. And over that time, you've probably run into a lot of people who are anti-climate change or something like that. Have you ever run into people who are like, By the way, this was me 2 years ago. So like
it's my family still today. So
yeah, I have flipped and now I'm like all, you know, climate change and save the world. But like what started this actually, I don't know if you know what started my journey.
Tell me.
I was on I just told it earlier today to a company, but I was at a bachelor party and we were playing this game called Hot Takes, which is basically like, you say something that you believe society would be mad at you about, but you believe in the world. And then everyone, it's not really a game. It's more of just like punishment from your friends. Like, and so I said, I don't believe in climate change. After a lot of people had said like Keanu Reeves is the greatest actor of all time, or which like everyone argued their point. And then one of my friends, Bobby Arnott, he like literally almost punched me in the face. And I was like, you know, obviously
been drinking,
but like there was such a ferocious response to this that I was like, I like finding friction points and figuring out like how I feel about them. And I didn't know anything about climate change. Like I literally knew nothing. And so it was just me like making fun of anyone who did in that group. And then I spent the next 3 months reading books about climate change, which does not do a service to the industry because they're all political. And then I started reading, you know, like seventh grade science books and like to get to the bottom of it. I don't want to spend too much time on me, but like this is how the beginning of my ocean tech obsession. And I slowly realized that the ocean is the biggest regulator of the Earth's temperature. And the whole debate about climate change or whatever is not about whether or not the Earth is warming. It's about who's causing it or what's causing it. And so like once I realized that, I was like, well, we might as well clean up the ocean and probably release less CO2 in the atmosphere. And I was like, those seem like logical things to do. And so what I am good at is bringing people together and aligning incentives. And those are two things that the ocean is lacking at the moment. And so that's why I took Boost VC and I'm moving in that direction. So,
and your friend from the Hot Cakes
he goes, so I can be directly, I just talked to him recently, actually. Okay. And he goes, so I can be directly responsible for saving the planet. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's one way of looking at it. Like,
it takes a village, right?
It takes a village. Yeah. And like, I am glad that Bobby challenged me. And I'm willing to change my opinions of things, and finding those friction points is always fun. Like,
well, I think now you can actually go out to the community and say, hey, this needs to be done. How can we support it better? Because there is a lack of that support.
And I think my story is like very synonymous with lots of what people's stories are going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they're not on a bachelor party, but like, like in general,
maybe they don't remember. Right?
Yeah. They might be. Okay. But for those people, I guess we sort of already covered this, but like for those people, do you have like a response or do you listen to them or do you?
You know, I went to high school in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and there's probably the 90% of the kids I went to school with or who are now adults don't prescribe to the theory that humans are causing climate change. So I'm a little tired of the debate. I just look at them and I say, read. Or better yet, hello, look around you. Look what's happening with the, you know, shifts and crazy shifts in weather, which, yes, they've been happening, but
I think that the story around climate change actually is selling fear, and what people need to do is be selling like optimism to own the ocean.
Yeah, but that's
And fear. That's what you're doing now.
That's yeah, and that fear button is also very hot in the US anyway.
Completely.
So it doesn't matter if it's climate change fear, terrorism fear, robots are killing us, everybody fear.
Everyone
it's
has
all
to pick
fear.
A side too. Like everyone feels they need to pick a side. And so like that's a tough. Yeah. So it's really like, okay.
AI fear.
So you're trying to walk the walk now.
I'm just saying those who are on the fence and need to be educated or want to be educated, yes, let's talk. But those who are just, you know, buckled down and heels in the ground, no.
Don't like to be wrong. It's difficult to like, I get that. What led you to aquaculture specifically? Because it sounded like the clownfish was able to be almost anything.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So when we started and put the company together, we always knew our bigger mission was, you know, save the seas. That's why it's written on our shirts. And, you know, that was Emily's, you know, quote, dad, you know, save the seas. But the question was, how do we get there? And so originally we're thinking, okay, well, we can make a robotic fish for swimming pools and, you know, beautification and hotels and Vegas parties. Cause, you know, Simeon comes from the entertainment industry also, you know, doing huge shows and stuff like that as a lighting DJ and played with all the great, you know, from Tiesto to, you know, you name it. Anyway, so we're thinking, you know, how we can make, you know, light shows for Vegas.
Or, you know, for the seas.
To generate the revenue to ultimately get out to the ocean. And then, you know, as a startup, you're always like, okay, how can I move fast before you run out of, you know, cash and the whole thing? So we just said one day, you know what? Let's just go straight to where our passion is, which is the ocean, and the rest will work out. I'm a huge believer in the universe will provide. And so that's what we did. And the inclination to go that direction was because of interest that we received from global reinsurers wanting to use it in ports, for monitoring ports for different reasons. And also because of the climate change driven superstorms that we're all experiencing and how we can gather in coastal flooding scenarios. So that was the direction. And, you know, you go out to the desert and you have all your eggs in this, you know, really amazing opportunity. And then, you know, especially at the corporate level, things change and then, you know, you're frozen. So that's when I saw a documentary called A Fish on Your Plate. And it was all about how fish farms in Norway are being sustainable. And I thought, oh my gosh, robot fish to monitor real fish. Good story. So I sent the 30-second clip of our fish to the, you know, the people who were featured in that documentary, who are industry leaders and, you know, turns out early adapters to new technology as well. And they wrote back right away and they said, oh my gosh, this is the craziest, the most interesting idea we've seen, because a lot of people always want to test their new inventions at, you know, their farm. They said, we love this. Come. Yes, we'll be your pilot partners. And we went and packed the whole team up and went there to Norway and spent a big chunk of November a year ago in the freezing cold weather on this fish farm on the Arctic Circle. Really cold. And you know, Simeon's father was a farmer. So he made the invention with farmers in mind on what works and what won't work. And plus, I grew up on a ranch too. So we were like in there hanging in the water. You know, they were just looking at who are these? We're not this high tech group coming from Silicon Valley who's afraid to like get our fingers wet.
No, you're farmers.
We're farmers at heart. So absolutely.
In the soil.
In the soil. In the pens.
In, yeah, the pens, in the water. In the fish.
So they, I think, were really excited about the potential. And, you know, there's funny crate stories that happened on, you know, that day. Like we went there with the fish, super excited, and put it in the water the day before we were supposed to do the demonstration, and didn't really take into account the fact that that water is really cold compared to the California waters that we'd been testing in. So our spine on our fish froze and it wouldn't move and it broke. And we're like, okay. And so this is where and why Simeon has that, you know, reputation of being Q. Literally, we, you know, everybody's like, oh, well, and you're on an island of 70 people. And we're thinking, oh, worst case scenario, we can go to the bar. Well, the bar wasn't even open. So so we're sitting there thinking, okay, tomorrow we got to do these tests. And Simeon and I are walking all over the island thinking, okay, would this rope work for a spine or this will work for a spine? And you know those boot warmers that come in houses?
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about.
A boot warmer, like if you go to Tahoe skiing, there's like these boot warmers that have a long kind of like, yeah. It looks like a vacuum hose.
Yeah, vacuum.
We took the boot warmer hose and I love to take credit for it. He jimmied it somehow. And
he created a spine out of a foot warmer.
And it worked out of the boot warmer. And then we were able actually even to put the boot warmer back when we left. So nobody was the wiser.
Well, there's one day where people's boots were not warm.
But let me tell you, that's true. And the next day, we all had cold feet. But when we threw it in the water, we have this on video. And if you ever look at it on our YouTube channel, there's this one shot where Simeon looks at the camera and he just kind of puts his thumbs up and blows air out of his mouth in this huge kind of look of relief because it swam.
Because the spine didn't stop.
It didn't stop. It swam.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it, but there you go. We have a different patent now, so.
why not, you know? Well, I don't know if you had the patent on shoe warmer spines or not, but you should.
Definitely. Thank you.
Boost VC writes the first check into sci-fi tech founders. We are all about investing towards a sci-fi world. If you want to get in touch with me, follow me on Twitter at Adam Draper or email me at podcast@boost.vc. Let's build the future. Okay, so in ocean tech, which is, you know, I'm assuming even just building anything that's going to be in the ocean, it's just harder than in the air because we're used to the air.
The ocean is really hard to work in besides the obvious. You know, you can't see it. It's underwater. The conditions, you know, the salty, the super, you know,
the cold,
or even, you know, it's just salt and water's strong and it's forceful. But also, I think the technology itself is coming from a place that's so unbelievably expensive. So even if you create an affordable system and you want to add to the payload, you're still at that challenge, like, what's out there now that is affordable, whether in the sensory, payload category, so that you can, like we do, add on to our platform with different payloads. So those companies that are, you know, inventing, you know, affordable sensors or LIDARs and things like that, I think that's kind of where the future is in ocean tech, is making systems affordable there. And up until now, it's been pretty much dominated by either military or oil and gas or so. But I see...
Are those prices coming down?
Prices are indeed coming down, yeah. And because more people are getting excited about the ocean space.
We do pave roads here. Do you feel you're a typical, like, Silicon Valley startup? Or do you not fit that mold? Like, how do you feel about that?
Well, we started in Silicon Valley. You know, we were...
Well, then you're a typical Silicon Valley startup.
We started in Los Gatos on the summit overlooking Monterey Bay. And... have lost a few fish along the way.
Hey, in order to save the oceans, first you have to lose some fish in the ocean.
Yes. But typical, I don't think we're a typical company, regardless of being in Silicon Valley or anywhere. I think we don't fit that mold. You know, none of us are, you know, MIT, Stanford, Harvard, you know, scientists. We're all very tough and experienced in our own right, in our own, my former profession, or Simeon in being, you know, inventor. But I think where we really step up, and I'm not saying that those who are typical don't, I'm saying that...
Well, I think you also are early in the space.
We're early in the space. I mean, that's Simeon. He's always, his inventions are at least like, I've said before, 5 years ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
I said, we got to run this year because we're in year four.
You have one more year.
So, yeah, there's that. It is getting more interested. But also, we were just like tough. I was a former conflict reporter, so I don't buckle down easily.
So I believe that has been my experience up to this point. In a great way. You fight for what you believe.
Yeah, we find it
and
with
we
a smile.
Need that. We need that in the ocean.
We do. And we try to be, you know, kind along the way. You know, we like to have a good time too. But,
so in my experience in the ocean, which is limited compared to 4 years of actually building a startup in ocean world, I feel the investor base has this psychological problem where they feel that it's only for nonprofits. And so like I feel like that's what I'm fighting against when I'm talking to venture capitalists or any investors. And I was just wondering if you had run up against that.
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, we did clearly have that option. You know, people do ask, well, why aren't you a nonprofit? Well, because I'll be honest with you, I don't want to knock on doors my entire career in this ocean tech space asking for money. I come from a space that I earn my money, not saying that nonprofits don't earn their money because they do in other ways, but that's just not our style.
Well, sustainability is also just one of these things where it's like either fundraising or you're making it from the consumer or the enterprise.
Swimming pools and lighting up fish would have been for the consumer, which we then also thought, do we want to deal with the consumer so much? Which the answer was no. So we wanted B2B. So we found that where we really found our people, if you will, the farmers being a case in point, we're able to do those interesting relationships, build those relationships, and grow the company as a B2B. And that seemed, it all came together in aquaculture. Also, you know, we're huge researchers. I mean, as an investigative journalist, you research everything. And that market is just exploding.
Right?
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
It's like
for some reason, it's just, I feel that it's the biggest market. Like, I'm not saying the biggest market no one's looking at. I just think it's the biggest market. Like, period. Like, not only aquaculture. Not even aquaculture. Like, the whole ocean. Just biggest market.
Yeah.
And, like, no one's looking.
Well, because, you know, in fairness for those who are investing in different, you know, verticals, there hadn't been a proper study done to the economics of the ocean because it's broken down in so many confusing ways, oil and gas, you know, even runoffs, farming. I mean, a lot of that gets attributed, ports gets attributed to land, as in, not ocean economy. So there was finally a study done, I think about 3 years ago, I want to say, three years ago, that said, okay, right now the ocean economy is about 1.5, 1.6 trillion. And we'll be 3 trillion by 2030.
I think that's undervaluing. Yeah.
It could even be. I mean, that's with the, you know, economic, you know, council. It's a huge market, the ocean space. I think more attention is being given to that. There are more studies coming out. Obviously, there's more work being done. Even the issues with oil and gas as renewable energies kind of take over. You have places like Norway who've taken their oil and gas pension fund and said, oh, let's look at the aquaculture. Aquaculture, we also have to feed the planet, and there are more and more people on the planet, and seafood, if done correctly, aquaculture is perhaps a way of helping, you know, feed the planet.
Yeah. I think most of humanity's biggest problems are solved by the ocean. So energy, food, water, like those are three huge things that could be all solved by the ocean.
Yeah. I mean, 60% of all the water in the U.S. is not drinkable, and people don't know that. People don't know what a vital source the ocean actually is, you know.
And we're so terra, we're so terra maximalist. I say terra maximalist, like earth, like we are so on land all the time that like – it's like 0.03% of all the Earth's water is actually on land. The rest of it is in the ocean. And so like we're fighting over like if there is good desalinization, we're fighting over like, you know, tiny amounts. Hopefully we can make clean drinking water for everyone, like that sort of thing. Okay, 10 years out, like what does the world look like? How did you save the world?
I don't know if I'm saving the world. I hope I'll be educating. Okay, so one fundamental
I don't know about saving the world. Ruling the world?
Really? Like, okay, I think the key is changing perception. So changing behavior. For example,
oh my God, I wasn't even sensitive enough. You're literally drinking out of a plastic bottle. I did not think about this.
So
ahead of time. I need to start making changes like this.
You need to start making changes. That's when I tripped over the coming in here. When it was because I said single-use plastics.
Oh, my gosh.
I tripped over the sink.
I am a part of the problem.
So to answer your question, if we can change one person's behavior, even yours today, by not buying these anymore.
Yeah, we're going to throw these out. These are gone, baby.
And, you know, yeah.
These are gone.
Gone.
Out.
So no more plastic single-use bottles or utensils or any of that stuff.
I cannot believe I did that. I did not realize I did this.
Hey. It's a step.
This was a learning moment for Adam. Thank you, Leanne. See, this whole conversation is about things I'm learning.
Yeah. And you can, if you stop using plastics and get everyone you know to stop, you can call me Leanne. Okay. You can call me what the hell you want.
No, I'll call you Liana. Well, I'll call you Lee. You told me to call you Lee. Yeah.
Call me Lee. My siblings call me Lee. But yeah, it's about changing behavior, which is also why, you know, we have on board a lot of cameras on our platform. And ultimately, it would be really cool to have, you know, a channel where we're showing the good, the bad, and the ugly 10 years out to answer your question. What are we doing? You know, we've already worked in aquaculture. We've been there for every super storm, every flood, every next, you know, Houston to you know, Florida. There's our fish, you know, gathering that data. Because what happens is on the stagnated waters is disease. So you have to monitor the disease and all that stuff that happens. But also, you know, we are out swimming around the ocean, you know, having the fish follow us because they tend to be, you know, like they think we're the mommy ship. So they follow us, and that maybe we can mitigate illegal fishing. 10 years out, let's have that channel where we are actually broadcasting the fish, the material that our fish is seeing under the waters. You're then able as a consumer to go online and look and say, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly of what Aquai's you know, fish are seen all over the place. Or let's say, apropos, like, you know, you want to see what the coral reef is and you want to feel like you're a part of that. So you buy a token and you send the fish to go to the Great Barrier Reef or to see other reefs that are being built.
In the Aquai submarine.
In the Aquai submarine.
That's shaped like a clownfish.
Or you just log on and you see what the fishes see. You know, you do it through VR.
Yeah. You're using all the things I'm interested in. So, yes, those all sound great. Okay. So, the next part of this is the lightning round.
Okay.
Are you ready for the lightning round?
I hope so.
Have you been ready for everything up to this point? The lightning round! Bah, 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 bah. If you had to eat one meal for every meal for the rest of your life, what would that meal be?
Baguette and cheese. Can I get wine in there too? If it's a meal?
Well, I guess it's the whole meal. I mean, I can live
on red wine, baguette, and cheese.
If you could only play one board game for the rest of your life, what would that board game be?
A board game?
Mm-hmm.
Chess.
Do you play chess?
Yeah, we played like a couple hours ago.
Oh my gosh. I should, during this podcast, I should just have people play chess while I'm here.
Backgammon, I really like too. It depends on the mood.
Really? I'm not a big backgammoner. I just haven't gotten into it yet. I don't quite understand how it works. I've only played like twice, so I guess that's my issue.
You need to play
that's
more.
My burden to bear.
Okay.
If you could meet any two people in the whole span of time and have dinner with them at one dinner, who would those two people be?
Oh, man. Dorothy Thompson.
Who is that?
Who's not my relative. Unless I don't know, maybe I'll do 23andMe and find out. So Dorothy Thompson was a journalist quite a while ago, Second World War area times. And she was just kind of one of these women who was one of the first out in the field telling stories and working in a man's profession, if you will. And it's just a very strong woman. And I always, you know, I read her biography and I just really thought, wow.
And her last name's Thompson.
And her last name's Thompson.
Why not? Must be
in the name.
Okay, right? Who's the other person?
Oh, man, that's not fair.
Well, they need to have a conversation that you're a part of.
The three of us?
All three of
you
are having the conversation.
Oh, so it would have to, well, then it would probably be Edith Piaf.
Who?
Edith Piaf.
Who's that?
So she was singer, a French singer. She had a really crazy life too. She was, I don't know if she was married to him when he was a race car driver, but she's another really kind of very successful, not opera, but singer. And I really loved her way of life, mm-hmm, and her way of thinking.
Do you like opera singing?
I love opera.
Oh, okay.
I do love opera. My grandmother was an opera singer from what is today the Czech Republic.
What's the coolest place you've ever been?
It's definitely a
good question, okay, because I like, as a journalist, you've probably traveled a lot.
Yeah, I have. So two most beautiful places that I've experienced. One was sunrise on Mount Sinai. So you can climb,
Sinai, and then you see the sunrise.
You go up the mountain, you start in the middle of the darkness, and by the time you get to the top, the sun will come up and there's this big blast of red that hits the entire area, plains. And you're just, that was, and is an amazing, beautiful sight. And I think I really enjoyed the jungles of Guatemala, Guatemala, Mexico, the jungle there, I think is just, wow, the jungle is such an amazing place. I really am a big jungle fan. Yeah. Also, yeah, in Ecuador, I just love jungles.
And what is your definition of success?
I guess when you go to sleep and you have a smile on your face and feel that, one, you're riding life as opposed to allowing life ride you, because it's really easy, I think, to look at life in a way that is defeating rather than to ride the wave of life and feel that it's carrying you forward and not holding you back.
You made a comment earlier about how sort of making decisions in the world will get out of your way. It was something like that.
Oh,
it was like
the universe will provide.
Universe will provide. And so it's very in line with the universe will provide after you've already made the decision to ride life,
yeah.
I guess.
I mean, I've lived life and am living life by allowing the universe to provide. And it doesn't mean you don't make decisions, clearly.
You have to.
You don't have some, you know, target focus. But I think it's about how you go. That for me is success. I mean, I achieved my childhood dream. So I'm having the time of my life because this, what we're doing, is the cherry on top of the sundaes and the whipped cream, if you like, you know, hot fudge sundaes.
Yeah. In the ocean. Okay, well, thank you for being on the Boost VC podcast. Unfortunately, we don't have time for Mark Zuckerberg today. So subscribe to the podcast and tune in next week. Thank you so much for listening in during your busy day to learn about all these awesome sci-fi people. For more information on what we do, check out our website at www.boost.vc. Also, we love to hear from our listeners, so rate us, drop us a comment on any streaming service you use. We would love to hear any feedback. Until next week, I'm Adam Draper, rocketing to the future. Pew, pew, pew!